Hello and welcome to the Many Rules of Film Club. My name is Jeff Yance, the program director at the Loft Cinema, and I'm also very happy to have here today occasional filmmaker Heather Lares.
Hello.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Je m'appelle Rusty.
Bonjour, Heather. Bonjour, Rusty.
I'm not even going to try.
Bonjour.
So we're feeling in a French mood this afternoon because today we are talking about, I think, one of our favorite genres, French New Wave.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, that. It is now one of mine.
Yes. And Heather is a big fan, I know.
Definitely.
Yes. And now Rusty is too, and I certainly am. So we want to talk about a little bit about the origins of French New Wave, and then we're each going to talk a little bit about one of our favorite French New Wave filmmakers. So French New Wave as a genre has been hotly contested over the years as to exactly what constitutes a French New Wave film. And the jury is out in terms of style, content, form, structure. But basically, I would say, yes, and maybe you'll agree, that it's a period of time, late 50s to the mid-1960s, made by a group of young filmmakers who were film critics first, then became filmmakers. And there are some stylistic elements that we can see, jump cuts, narrative time frame jumping, shooting on street location shooting.
Yeah, using extras who just happened to be at that spot at the time, and even non-actors in big roles.
Right. So you can, it's one of those things that you know it when you see it. You can tell a French New Wave film when you see it, for sure. And there are also some historical precedents for French New Wave. And we were talking earlier, Rusty, about the film The Little Fugitive.
Yeah, Little Fugitive, I just love. And it's directed by Maurice Engel. And Truffaut says that the New Wave doesn't happen without Little Fugitive. And Little Fugitive is a film shot in New York. So it's an American film, actually. And it was done with what would become the Steadicam. It was like the prototype for the Steadicam. You could wear it on your chest, and it was kind of hidden. And the movie is about a 7-year-old boy who thinks he's accidentally shot his brother when their mom's away for a day and a half. Mm-hmm. And the older brother has just tricked him because he's just upset. And so the little boy runs off. And where do you run off if you're a little boy in New York? With about $5, you go to Coney Island.
That's right.
That's where he's just going to go live.
Yes. Yes.
and it's really great because you see Coney Island in the mid-50s, and nobody knew that they were going to be extras in the films that day or those days that they were there. But he's got the little camera on his chest, and it's kind of hidden. And it's gorgeously shot. This is his first film that he did, and his wife co-directed it and their friend. But it's really a gorgeous thing. And they were still photographers before they made this movie. And you can see that everything's got this real high contrast. It's a gorgeous film to watch. And the children are non-actors. The little boy who's 7 never acted again. It's the only movie he was ever in. And you can see elements of Breathless and certainly the 400 Blows.
Yes.
Yeah. Where it's kids kind of fending for themselves. And so I imagine Truffaut saw that film and was like, oh, my gosh, that's like my childhood, except I didn't have Coney Island to go to.
Yeah, it's sort of an undiscovered gem, but apparently the French New Wave filmmakers knew about it.
Well, and that's something about French New Wave, too, that there's a love of Hollywood cinema and of cinema in general from America. Bogart, at that point, had passed away. He hadn't been rediscovered by Americans yet. It had kind of become obscure. There were no theaters showing old movies at the time. And so you couldn't go and see a Bogart movie. You couldn't see it on TV, obviously, in the 60s, the late 50s or early 60s. And so there's a love of cinema that they were looking at what Americans were doing. B-movies especially. And
gangster flicks,
gangster
musicals
flicks,
they loved.
The
yes.
anti-hero.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like... maybe we should just talk about some of the big French New Wave filmmakers. Obviously, Truffaut and Godard are the Batman and Superman of the French New Wave, or the Lennon and McCartney, they have often been called. I think any number of famous duos. But those are the two big filmmakers of the genre. And I know, Heather, that you are a big fan of Francois Truffaut.
I bet I am.
A passion burns in your heart.
A passion burns,
yes.
Yeah. I would say that's correct.
Yeah. So what would you say is the definitive Truffaut film for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I probably would say Jules et Jim, and Jules and Jim. And forgive me if I butcher any sort of French language, because I'm not very good at it. So, but yeah, Jules and Jim is the one that I've probably seen the most. It's his third film. Yeah, Truffaut's third film, I think. So it's a period piece, 19 teens, 20s. So that was kind of odd in and of itself for French New Wave, but I still think it fits in that genre. It has Jean Moreau, who is a very famous French actress, and it has Henri Serre. It plays Jim, and Oscar Werner plays Jules. And it's a little bit of a love triangle. Jules and Jim are the two male leads, and they were very good friends in the film. They get to know each other. It talks about how they have such a friendship where they can talk for hours and hours, and nothing gets old for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of portrays their little love, their love tryst here and there with different women. And then they come upon Catherine, and she's played by Jean Moreau.
And who could resist?
Yes, who could resist? She's got such great style and character, and such a strong presence on any movie she's in. Mm-hmm. So, and she does that so well in this movie. So of course they both fall in love with her, but Jules is the one that gets her. Eventually they marry, yet they end up, the threesome ends up being separated because they both are called to war. Jules is called to fight for his country, and Jim is called to fight for France. And so, you know, the years separate them, but they eventually come back together. Catherine and Jules have a child, so they have their own family after the war. It kind of, there's this implication there of the psychological effect it had upon both men from the war. And they don't really go into depth with it, but there's a little bit of a commentary there. And so after that, they come back together, and, you know, Jules tells Jim that Catherine's not in love with her anymore, and that Jim finally acknowledges his love for Catherine. And so Jules basically says, Jim, you can have her. She wants to be with you as long as she stays in my life. And so it kind of goes on from there. And it's just this idealized romantic notion that you can have people in your life under certain conditions. Like, you can kind of set this framework, and then it's all going to work out as long as everyone agrees. And it's, you know, not really how life happens. And so, being French New Wave, they kind of present the realities of it, despite the romantic ideals of the situation. And so I don't think I'm going to give away the ending, but it's very traumatic to watch.
Yes.
And but I think in a way hints on, you know, how all of these things affect their lives, how Catherine affects both men, how the war affected them, you know, and how they both dealt with it. And so anyways, it's one of my favorites. It's beautiful. The soundtrack is beautiful. There's definitely, you know, there's the freeze frames in the film. There's the musical number. So there's very kind of telltale signs of being new wave and very French, if you will.
Yeah. And it's also a little bit of a riff on Hollywood melodrama, I think, which I think Truffaut was obviously very enamored of, but twisted, the French twist, if you will.
Yeah. He doesn't like, he is, the thing about Truffaut is that he loves romanticism, the romantic ideals, but he takes that French sensibility of the doom and gloom of real life. That just happens, that, you know, these things happen. It doesn't, you don't have to have this idea. Like, he takes a Hollywood idea, and he doesn't have to gift wrap it to you in a nice box. He takes it and gives you some of the reality that, you know, sometimes it's extreme. Like, I think Jules and Jim is a little bit extreme, but it's reality. Like, if you would have gotten this, you've gotten various love triangle stories in Hollywood. So that very few are going to end this way that Jules and Jim ended.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, there's this romantic ideal as opposed to Godard, who Rusty will talk about, but that's the kind of way Truffaut went. He went more that traditional, even though that he states that the reason why they started one of the French New Wave was to get away from traditional storytelling, and they don't, but they have that traditional romantic ideal, at least Truffaut did.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also important to point out the sort of intellectual underpinning of the French New Wave. All of these filmmakers, Godard, Truffaut, Chabrol, Jacques Rivette, they were all film critics for the Cahiers du Cinéma. very famous right. French film magazine in the 60s. So they came at it also from an intellectual standpoint yeah. as well as emotional. But Truffaut, I think, really played up the emotions, where Godard was maybe more towards the intellectual side of filmmaking.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that if you read any of Truffaut's movie reviews pre-French New Wave, you'll see his love of filmmaking, or his love of movies is there. And then his next stage in life was, oh, okay, I want to make those movies. And how can I do that? And he kind of, they both became auteurs of that kind of style.
And Truffaut is inspiring because he is so passionate about film. And my favorite Truffaut film is Day for Night from the 70s. Which is about the making of a film. Truffaut stars as a filmmaker based on himself, but also shows the warts and all of making a film. But it is kind of a romanticized view of how this is the highest thing one can aspire to, is to yeah. be a filmmaker. So he had a real burning passion for film, which is great and inspiring, I think.
Yeah, and as much as they started working together, like crewing for each other and writing with each other, I think they both, in particular Godard and Truffaut, have this auteur ideal, like, this is my movie, this is the story I'm going to tell. Where nowadays it's kind of more of a team effort. There's so many players in the team and so many voices that get heard. And Truffaut and Godard are kind of come from that old school, like, this is my movie kind of thing.
Yeah, they all really love the auteur theory. And Truffaut wrote the great book about Hitchcock, Hitchcock-Truffaut. He obviously thought Hitchcock was a great auteur, and they sort of respected that when Hollywood filmmakers could become auteurs in the Hollywood machine.
Yeah.
And so juxtaposing Truffaut with Godard is interesting. So, Rusty, you watched a lot of Godard films recently.
I did. I had never seen a Jean-Luc Godard film before I started watching them. And my friend Peter suggested I try to watch things chronologically with him. As Godard gets more and more obtuse the longer his career goes on. He's still making movies.
Yes.
And like you pointed out, his last film you guys showed at the Loft, Jeff, and it made people mad.
Yes, it's called Goodbye to Language. It was in 3D. It's totally experimental. People were furious. And I love the fact that he's still upsetting people decades on.
His first film is 1960 and it's Breathless.
Yeah.
And to me, it's almost the quintessential new wave in that it's got all of the elements of the new wave. Truffaut wrote the original script and then Godard changes it up. It's made by these friends who just wanted to make movies together. They would do it on a shoestring budget. They would do it without a whole lot of planning. With Godard, evidently his shoots could be a half an hour one day or the next day be 12 or 14 hours long. He would just shoot for as long as he had ideas that day. And then they'd shoot all that stuff. They'd go home at night and he would rewrite the script for the next day and show up and have everybody yeah. half furious at him.
It's like improv. It's got the vibe of improv jazz.
Yes, yeah. And Breathless mm-hmm. certainly has that.
Yes.
You've got some really great scenes where he introduces the jump cut, which he does just out of necessity because they told him it was too long. So he went and took scissors to it and just cut parts out. So you've got what seems like a conversation that's going in real time, but then you've got these jump cuts that make you think it's not happening in real time at all. In fact, it couldn't be happening in real time. For audiences at the time, that had to be pretty confusing.
Mind-blowing, yes.
In fact.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a lot of that with Godard. He, in Breathless, it's a really fabulous film. When we talked about the Sound and Sight list, I think it comes in at number 13 of the greatest films of all time. Mm-hmm. And it really is. It's an amazing debut. That it's somebody's debut film is really hard to believe. And it's a caper. A man shoots a police officer and then takes off and tries to convince this American girlfriend of his to stay with him. And they honestly have completely different lifestyles. They're not on the same page. They're both completely obsessed with themselves more and trying to fit that on to one another, fit that you're going to work for me because I'm so attracted to you, even though right. even though emotionally we have true. Nothing in common.
It's very hot. It's a very sexy movie, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Both of them. It's Jean-Paul
Belmondo.
Yeah. And Jean Siebert, who's actually an American.
Yeah.
And her story. Wow. It's fascinating. Just as an actor, what she went through.
Right.
She ended up getting into the CIA was following her and really interested in her political leanings because she was giving money to the Black Panthers
yeah.
and to Native American groups.
Yeah, she had some mental health issues and
Well, yeah, because they messed with her so bad.
Yeah.
They put out these stories that weren't true about her child, that it may have been that it and it caused her to lose her child. She actually the child she had a stillbirth. But it's a really fascinating, sad story behind her.
Yeah.
But she's in Breathless and she's amazing in it. Later on, he would use Anna Carina a whole lot.
Yes, I would say the amazing Anna Carina.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
She's like the female epitome of the French New Wave.
Yes.
French New Wave and this ultra cool sexiness that it's really neat. But I watched four Godard films. I watched Breathless and I watched My Life to Live with Anna Carina. Mm. She's an aspiring actor who ends up being a prostitute. And it's very sad. But I kind of liked it better than Breathless, honestly. I found it more interesting. And it's more of a Godard film where it's becoming. And with each successive film, he is an auteur. He's referencing his other films all the time. And he's constantly moving to break apart film narrative. And that's where he's kind of like the Lennon, the John Lennon to Truffaut's McCartney, in that Lennon could write a song like Revolution Number 9 and put it out there, even though it was completely nonsensical. Nobody was going to understand it. It would probably make people mad at the time. Godard was fine with that and is still. He didn't care if he was making mad. Yes. In fact, he doesn't. He's almost contemptuous of his audience. And so then I went on and watched Alphaville, which is from 1965. And I think that this is really important in the French New Wave in that it's a sci-fi film, a dystopian science fiction film. And it's interesting because, again, like we talked about with French New Wave, it could be a crime movie. It could be a musical. It could be a science fiction movie. Right. It doesn't have to fall into a specific genre to be French New Wave. Mm-hmm. And Alphaville's a really perfect example of that.
Yes.
It's really interesting, fascinating film. Again, Anna Carina's in it, and she's great. And then I watched two or three things I know about her, just probably towards the end of the New Wave, 1967. Mm. And that film is really interesting. Godard is whispering throughout it. He's your whispering narrator. And he's all the time talking about philosophy and all the time talking about the philosophy behind capitalism and materialism. And the woman is a prostitute because her husband tells her to be, and you follow her through the day. There is a tiny bit of a story there, but it really is looking at, she's wearing, it's not that the husband sends her to be a prostitute because they're not making enough money, but she's dressed at the height of fashion, it seems to me. She's not in rags by any means. She's got these amazing clothes on the whole time. She's talking about all this lifestyle stuff, and the movie follows her, but then all at once she'll be going through a cafe and she passes the server, and all at once the server breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to the camera about who she is and what her life goals are and the philosophy behind how she sees life. And that's how the movie is. There is a story there. It follows her through the day, but it's really more this screed on capitalism. And I think he equates capitalism to prostitution, that we're giving away all of our time and everything that matters to us so that we can just have the newest jacket or the newest shoes or bag or whatever it happens to be, the next house that we should move to with it should be bigger and better. And society is always building new stuff on top of the old. And I think Godard obviously looks at that somewhat contemptuously.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. And his next film was Weekend, which was 68. And that was really, I think a lot of people consider the breaking point that he had with narrative at all.
Yeah.
After 68, he went very deep into the intellectual realm, I think, and started not really caring about audiences following him. Whereas Truffaut, I think, also developed a little bit more of a commercial sensibility.
He joined the band Wings.
Exactly. His wife playing keyboards. So it was interesting how they sort of diverged in that sense, yet they were still making very personal films, which is a big thing for the French New Wave. It had to feel personal.
Yes.
But one in the commercial realm, one in an extremely non-commercial realm.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think, you know, Truffaut continues his films. You know, he does the series, the Jean-Pierre Lelude series, where he takes the young boy from 400 Blows and he kind of takes him, creates his character, and he has multiple movies with him. I think there's five, maybe. Mm-hmm. Tells him about him and his love life and his experience with women. And it's very Truffaut in that, you know, Truffaut in real life was a bit of a womanizer, had many, many affairs with a lot of the women, lead women in his movies. He was just a romantic, a French romantic. You know, he had that sense of I want love and sexuality at every turn, but at the same time, I'm going to give you the realism of it. And it kept going down the road to more traditional storylines as opposed to Godard, who went the other way.
Right. And one filmmaker that I'm really interested in, sort of more of a tangential French New Wave, I think, filmmaker, was Jacques Demy, who I think is most, certainly not as prolific as either Godard or Truffaut. He also died fairly young. But his biggest film is probably The Umbrellas of Cherbourg from 1964. Is considered a French New Wave film, but it's very different from most of the other French New Wave films at that time, but also similar in that it's indebted to the Hollywood musical. He loved big, splashy Hollywood musicals like Singing in the Rain. So this stars Catherine Deneuve in her first big role. I would almost say no one as beautiful has ever been on screen as Catherine Deneuve in The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It's just unbelievable. And she plays a teenage girl who works in an umbrella shop that her mother owns. She has a very tumultuous relationship with an auto mechanic named Guy. And then things intrude. Prostitution, jealousy, the Algerian War. You know, all the standards.
It seems to be a theme. Prostitution and war.
When war, exactly. Yes, this is the French New Wave. Very French New Wave. But the unique thing about the film at the time, and still to this day, is that it's what they call a sing-through musical, and that the entire film is sung. There's no spoken dialogue, which it can be a little bit difficult for people to sort of wrap their heads around now. But it's really great. The musical scores by Michel Legrand, who did a lot of Demy's films in terms of creating these great kind of pop jazz operatic tunes. This is sort of a pop opera, I guess.
I like that.
Yeah. And a couple of the songs actually became big hits here in America for Tony Bennett and some other of the standard singers. But really the other key element is the style of The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and that it's the entire film is shot as though a pastel candy shop had exploded.
Yes, I'd agree.
Everything is blue, yellow, pink, like really shocking colors. And that was another thing Jacques Demy was really enamored of, was sort of the artifice of Hollywood. So he did a follow-up film called The Young Girls of Rochefort, also starring Catherine Deneuve, also a big musical featuring Gene Kelly because of his association with Hollywood musicals. And that film is even more over the top in terms of the color palette and the big production numbers. But I think Jacques Demy is very illustrative of how the French New Wave encompassed a lot of different things, but it was really an attitude. And it was really about breaking apart convention and taking things, making it your own, twisting it.
Yeah.
Doing it on a really small budget.
Right.
And that was one of the things about Godard that I found really fascinating, was the fact that he made Breathless in 1960. That's his first movie. By 1965, he had made like 10 movies. He kept making two or three films a year because they were just going at such a breakneck pace making these things. And I really that energy is there. You totally get it in a lot of his films. And I think that that's really fun for a modern audience. I found it really interesting.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you watch a lot of French New Wave films, you'll see that the filmmakers had a tendency to use the same characters and actors popping up throughout the film. So Jacques Demy tended to have actual characters pop up in subsequent films. Mm-hmm. And certainly Truffaut did that with Leo as his Antoine Donnel character. Mm-hmm. So they were creating this universe, this self-contained universe, much like I think people think Tarantino does today, where there's crossover between all these films. And Anna Karenina wasn't playing the same character in the Godard films, but I think she was playing a similar character in a lot of the films.
Yeah, she was. And in fact, Godard made a film, I haven't seen it yet, but Band of Outsiders, that she's in, that's also a caper pick. In which she's the love interest of the two guys in doing the caper, right?
Yes, that's my favorite Godard film. And that's a little like Jules and Jim. It's right. about a trio, a love menage, a trois. Also has a great musical number in it. They all had musical numbers, which I love. And it's got this great dance number in the middle of the film.
That's the one thing I've seen that's amazing.
Yes, where they're doing the Madison.
That's
which
right.
was the big 60s dance craze that... We all don't know, but we should. We probably should. And we should all watch Band of Outsiders.
Wouldn't it be so much more fun if we all right now got up and did that in unison? Yes. That'd be amazing. Our listeners would be impressed.
When there's the musical scene with in Jules and Jim, when one of Catherine's lovers is playing guitar and she sings a song that she wrote. So all of them are, you know, they have that in there as well.
And Breathless has a great soundtrack that's really French cafe sounding.
Oh, yeah. Right.
It's really great. All the movies have great music. And in fact, Breathless, there are a lot of references to music and musicians as well. As much as there is movies, he's talking about music and philosophy too a lot.
Right. Yeah. And that was that kind of freedom they had. They just put anything they wanted that they liked into their films. They weren't concerned with audiences. They weren't, and also the French government, of course, helped support their filmmaking, which
the government that supports the arts,
right? Which gave them a lot of freedom to do whatever they wanted, which American filmmakers don't really enjoy that freedom.
Sadly, no.
No, and that's the one thing about watching Godard for the first time. By the time I got through two or three things I know about her, he's completely breaking narrative. And like you had mentioned, when you talk to people who were alive at the time, when I look at Breathless now or two or three things I know about her, My Life to Live, I feel like we haven't lived up to those films as a culture. Like film... They were trying to break away from the stuff that's almost happening today, these big budget things that are overwrought.
Right.
And here they were trying to break away with it and trying to make completely new ways of telling movies. And Godard was just trying to get you to feel things almost, as opposed to even tell you a story. And now I just feel like we've almost gone backwards. We've regressed from those. And you were saying at the time, people were like, oh, this is how movies are just going to be now. People who were alive at the time seeing
people
them.
People have said, when I saw Breathless when I was in college, they would say, I assumed this is the future of movies and they're all going to be like this.
Little did they know.
No, things changed a lot after that. That was a short-lived phenomenon, the French New Wave.
Yeah.
But I think it's ripple effects are still with us.
Oh, absolutely.
With your auteur filmmakers like Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino. And
David Lynch.
David Lynch. You can feel it, but it hasn't really gone mainstream per se.
Well, there's not that. There was a brief window when I was in college in the late 90s where you had the Dogma 95 filmmakers were kind of trying to come have this culture of filmmaking, which it was a very strict and odd and limiting. But they were trying something similar kind of to French New Wave.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like we haven't had anything. No group was trying something like that since then. So it's been almost 20 years since something like that has happened. And hopefully something will pop up again.
Yeah. A filmmaking philosophy is a very cool thing. And it's not something that comes around very often.
Right. And it's maybe not something that... It's just trying something new. Like what there's, you know, and I think we were stuck in that for so long that, you know, people are afraid to try something new because they're afraid it won't make money. And, you know, I think if we can get away from that, and you think you would, and I think maybe there are places like YouTube and stuff like that that lets you do that.
The jump cut is all over the place in YouTube.
Well,
it really is.
You get away with, right? You get away with not needing coverage because it's become secondhand. You know, I'm not going to have any B-roll because I'm just talking to the camera, or, you know, that's become a thing. And I, you know, so who knows? I mean, maybe that place is YouTube and not a movie theater. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe YouTube is the new French New Wave.
Well, and I do see, I mean, we talked about some directors who are doing it. I mean, even I watched Alien recently as we were going to do a Sigourney Weaver episode. And Alien, I really feel like I can see Godard's influence a little bit in just Ridley Scott's choice of shots. It's really, he's telling the story as much as he's telling it with words. He's telling it with just the images, too. The images are really amazing. And if you just take the images alone, they're somewhat surreal. You know, and so I really see it. I mean, even in people who aren't auteurs necessarily, although Ridley Scott probably is, but you do see the ripple effects, like you said. But nobody's making these films that are about philosophy and about existentialism, which is what I feel like a lot of what Godard was doing. And now we instead have to be worried more about the bottom line, though Godard's Breathless made money.
Yeah,
it was a different time.
It was a different time.
And what a time it was. So we're going to have to wrap up, unfortunately, our conversation about the French New Wave. But it was très bien, I must say.
Oui, oui.
Yeah.
Muy bien.
So I want to thank Rusty and Heather for being here today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and on our next Many Rules of Film Club, we're going to be talking about the career of, I think, one of our best modern day American actresses, Sigourney Weaver, which leads me to rule number 307 of Many Rules of Film Club, and that in space, it takes a woman to do a man's job.
Here,
and
here.
So we will see you next time on the Many Rules of Film Club. Please check us out on manyrulesoffilmclub.com. And you can also check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and you can rate us and all of that.
All that stuff.
Judge us. Okay. All right. Thanks. And we'll see you next time.